Hey, parents and little adventurers. Ever wondered where hot dogs come from? Dive into a world of wonder with the new children's book about cellular agriculture.
Cellular agriculture? What's that?
It's the science behind tomorrow's foods. Discover the journey of a family barbecue in a way that's fun, educational, and downright tasty. Grab your copy of Where Do Hot Dogs Come From? On Amazon today.
Yum! The future sounds so delicious.
Curious for more? Visit www.hotdog.fyi. Happy reading!
Thanks for joining us on the Cultured Meat and Future Food Show. We're back from our fall break and ready to kick into gear. We're excited to have Ira Van Alen as the guest for today's episode. Ira Van Alen is the co-founder of Kind Earth Tech and Respect Farm. She is a designer with a demonstrated history of working in event design, healthcare ICT, marketing, and the think tank industry. The legacy as the daughter of Wilhelm Van Alen and 40 years of clean, cultured, cultivated, just in vitro meat history is converted into speaking about the potential of and understanding the urgency of this innovation so that the audience can embrace this idea. She is proud to be able to work on two passions, cultured meat as the legacy from her father and preventative oral care as a gift to her son. As one of the organizers of Kind Earth Tech, next year, KET will be hosting events that take place in Paris, Singapore, Amsterdam, London, and back in San Francisco in early 2021. This recording took place in Maastricht in the Netherlands during the 5th Scientific International Conference on Cultured Meat. I really wanted to start out and say that you were involved with the cell cultured meat industry in a very unique way. So tell us about your involvement and when you started devoting time to the topic.
Actually, quite recently, only the last years, I've been devoting time to the topic. And through my father, who started talking about this and thinking about this and actually working on cultured meat, which was named in vitro meat at the time. And even that, I'm not even sure whether that was the very first name that he thought of. But that was in the 1980s. And I was at the time probably, let's say, 14 or 15 years old. And suddenly my father, who was not a scientist, who had some medical training, but he had worked together with my mother in creating very nice and well-designed restaurants, hotels, stuff like that. And in my view, was more of a sort of, let's say, businessman. And suddenly he started talking to, in his eyes, very interesting people because he read about them. And it was had something to do with stem cell research. And suddenly he started talking about creating meat out of stem cells. And I was a teenager, and most people probably remember not being very interested in what your parents do. There are these old people that you don't listen to, and you find them annoying. And I wasn't any different. I found my father very annoying. And him, when he was talking about this topic over and over and over and over again for the next 40 years, it felt a little bit as if I went to church. So I've been to the Cultured Meat Church for over 40 years, I think. And that wasn't always fun. So it has been very time-consuming in my life. But to be quite honest, to actually work on this topic, that came about because somebody gave me a call telling me that they had bought my father's cultured meat patents.
Oh, interesting.
And telling me to look at a film. And that was about 2 years after my father had passed away. And I had cleaned out his office and not even knowing whether I was looking at a patent or something important and feeling very anxious about cleaning out this amazing office that he was in and where he worked in for so many years, and also uncultured meat. And then I put it in boxes, and I didn't think about it for about 2 years until that phone call and the film of Ian the chicken walking around.
That was the film?
That was the film.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah. So did you get a call from, like, Just?
No, I got an email, and I really do remember getting that email and looking in the inbox and in vitro meat, or probably it was another name, I'm not sure, but wanting me to look at something. And I didn't want to because I was so fed up and disappointed about the fact that we'd done a lot and my father had done a lot, but it wasn't in the supermarket. So at that point, I was in a sort of state like, this is probably one of those great ideas that we will find out too late that we should have done that. Then suddenly finding an email about this was not the first thing I wanted to do. So I didn't react to the email at first. And then I got a call from Josh Tetrick and told me, look at the film. So I did. And I teared up because that was the total package of what my father and I and a small group of people, as far as I was aware of at the time, had been talking about. So seeing something that was top of mind for so many years and exactly what my father had thought of being portrayed in such a very nice way, because the guy making that film is Colby Macri, and he's a wizard and he gets it totally. So it got to me. So I replied to Josh, you can call me anytime. And that's really the only reply I gave. And then he called me back and he started to explain Cultured Me to me. And I was really like, hold on, you're not going to explain Cultured Me to me. I'm going to tell you what it is.
Right.
And that's got into a really lively and fun and very nice conversation. And then him being so enthusiastic and this film actually being there made me aware of the fact that I had missed out. So I've told many people, it really felt as if I was being pulled back into this, like as if I had been in a sort of hibernation. And so since that phone call, being totally moved, I've been at the computer finding out what was going on. And then shortly after that, I found out there was the third Cultured Meat convention here in Maastricht, where we are now. And I called Mark Post and I said, Mark, I have no idea what I'm going to do there, but can I come? And Mark said, yes, you can come, but you will have to say something. Oh. Otherwise, I can't just invite you. And yeah. I was really, me saying something on stage, that's weird. Well, we'll see. Wow. I can't promise.
This was not last year, but the year before.
Yeah. And I also remember Mark telling me like, well, it's very scientific. Are you sure you can sit in on that? And I said, well, I've been sitting in on dentistry conventions like this for over 30 years. So I think I'll manage. And being here in Maastricht 2 years ago, shortly after I had seen that film, that was an amazing happening for me because there were almost 100 people in one place that for the first time in my life, I didn't have to explain what Cultured Meat was. And up to that point, I have been explaining what Cultured Meat is,
right,
what the routes to the shops would be, what it would mean for farmers, how it would look like in the shop. I've done that for 30 years, 40 years. And to be in a room suddenly with all people that were also being very nice to me because I was this daughter of.
Right.
Yeah, I think I was hurting from just grinning and smiling and being so overly happy. And then meeting some amazing people that I clicked with instantly and seeing what was actually being done. Also seeing how much work there still had to be done. That's how I got back into it.
Yeah. So that's actually kind of what I wanted to ask next was, you know, what have you seen over the last 20, 30 years, I guess, that is not really something that's being discussed now?
A lot is being discussed, but we are using different words, different names. That changes.
Was naming ever an issue before?
Oh, yes. One of the last times my father was on stage was at an event that I helped organize at NEMO in 2010. We organized, it was actually called Pure Meat Convention.
Pure Meat?
Yeah.
Was that a term back then?
That was a term for a while.
Okay.
I think I've been through about 20 names in these last decades. Yeah. And every name makes sense at that time. So clean meat made sense to the people at that time. I didn't like the term. It was actually my first ever conversation with Bruce, telling him, I don't like this term.
Yeah.
And Bruce really like, who are you?
Yeah, right.
But right now they have cultivated meat, which I like very much. Mm-hmm. But I am sure that there will be another name right. in about 2 or 3 years that will make sense to the people at that moment. And I'm totally fine with it. But I do remember my father getting on stage, and I think at that time he was 88. Mm-hmm. And he took the mic from the moderator. And the moderator actually gave him the mic, which was really nice. And that was a moderator that wouldn't have done that normally, but he sort of got it. And my father went there and took the mic and said, "Come on, people, stop talking about how to name it. It is just meat."
Right.
And this is the story I told Josh Tetrick about my father, because Josh invited me to come over to San Francisco. And I felt like I was a sponge, that he wanted to get everything about my father. So he was not interested in me at all. He was interested in the story of my father and how on earth my father had had this idea and actually started working on it. And just Josh was sort of fair enough to say, "I wanted to have that idea. I'm jealous about the idea that somebody else had this idea. This should have been my idea. And how did he came about that idea?" So I told Josh that my father said, "It was just meat." And in Dutch, you would say, "Het is gewoon vlees." I'm not even sure whether that was an English or a Dutch-speaking convention. But I do remember my father being sort of friendly annoyed about the fact that everybody was talking about how to name it and whether the public would get that. And he said, "Come on, what we are talking about and what we are making is supposed to be just meat, not something else. So why would you give it another name?" And then everybody was nodding at that moment, and he went back to his seat and nothing really dreadful happened. So one of my favorite names is, of course, Just Meat.
Oh, Just Meat.
Yeah, that is because that's what it is. It's Just Meat.
That's what it is, yeah.
And in English, you have the advantage that it is, on one way, it's just meat, but it's also just as in it's the right kind of meat. Mm-hmm. So, especially in English, I like that name a lot. Mm-hmm. So, I hope that eventually this will become just meat, just chicken, just fish, just shrimp, whatever, because that is what it's supposed to be. But I don't really mind whatever name it's going to be given. I think in the end, the public will decide what to call it.
So, I'm excited to talk about Ket or Kind Earth Tech, but before we do... Yesterday, we were talking about how your father's background was actually not in the sciences, and he really brought people together to work on this technology. Can you tell us a little bit about that and how, you know, what he would do and how he would find people interested, or maybe even how he would motivate people to work on this technology?
My father was one of the best storytellers, I think, in the world. He could even talk about dreadful things happening in the Second World War as if it was a great story, a book. He was very convinced himself that this was the route to go around meat. So it was a genuine conviction that producing meat in a different way would be the way to the future. For me, as my father, I always said my father was a bit weird. Other people say my father was a visionary. That's nice. I think in a way that's probably true. But he was also very charming, and he could talk for hours. And I think he was very good in finding out what was interesting in his story to the people that he was talking to. But the first 10 years of this quest has been for him to find people willing to not only listen to him, but actually be brave enough to go work with him or actually do something. So where he went out in 1980, probably with just, mind you, there was no internet, there was no Google. So how do you find somebody? And so he was reading up, he found names, then he somehow found phone numbers. And that in itself was time consuming. Mm-hmm. Then you would find an address, and then you would drive to a university or a doctor or a scientist in a lab, and there you were, not being a scientist yourself, always being perceived as if you were, because he was very knowledgeable on the thing. So, and you don't walk around with your PhD on your chest like, "I'm this or that." So a lot of people have always assumed that he was a doctor or a scientist. Even if you go to Wikipedia, they say this is this doctor. And I've tried to change it, but
it's wrong on Wikipedia.
Yeah, Wikipedia says it's you're not right. And I and who are you? And I'm so but this is all online. So I've tried to correct it because I think it's actually very interesting that someone outside of science got so, let's say, even in a positive way, obsessed about this idea that he wanted to educate scientists around this idea and wanted to have them go with him in this idea. But in the 1980s, so his 10 years was spent on getting the right people to understand what his idea was, used his stem cell research and techniques solely used for medical reasons by doctors in hospitals or in labs, and try them to get them to create steaks for supermarkets.
Hmm.
And for my father, that was the total logical next step. You make something and I'll sell it to the supermarket. When you're trained like a doctor and your career path is something, your career path is totally away from a supermarket, that's the one thing your parents didn't want you to do,
mm-hmm.
then an elderly gentleman, because when my father started this, he was already mid-50s, probably in his 60s.
That's when he started?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. He started, I think, when he was 54, 55. So this was definitely a sort of second career. Even though he didn't see it as a career, I think he saw it as a mission or something he had to accomplish. But he found people crazy enough to put money into it and to get people to write down on a piece of paper that this was actually a feasible idea. So I remember that he was so happy that he got a sort of written proof of concept in 1993. And that got some balls rolling. And then he found a couple of scientists willing to put their careers and their good name on the line to work with him. But my father promised them money to do research. He also found somebody to write down this world-famous patent, because he didn't write it himself. He got somebody to write down his ideas in the right words. And he also privately funded that. Everything up to that point was totally privately funded. And he wrote the patent so that he could get companies and corporations and the government funding. Because at that time, here in the Netherlands, we had a system that you could get a grant or you could get subsidized. If you had a combination of universities and companies working on a specific idea. Well, in the universities, he got some people, I think Amsterdam University, Joost Teixeira de Matos. He was supposed to look at how to feed the cells. There was somebody looking at how would consumer acceptance be. And in Maastricht, he found Carlijn Boute. She was at that time working on creating heart valves. And she was super excited about this, and she totally got this. And the other big hero was Peter Verstraeten. He was working at a meat processing company at that time. And at that time, my father was in his 70s. And one of the things my father would do was just show up at somebody's office that he wanted to talk to without having an appointment.
Right.
So Peter Verstraeten was one of those people kind enough to willing to listen to a 70-year-old man telling quite outrageous story.
And this is when Peter was in the meat industry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so my father had the idea, but there are so many crucial people in this whole story. So for me, when I'm around here, there are two heroes, of course, here. One is Mark Post, everybody knows him. But the other one is Peter Verstraeten, because he, and I knew my dad, so, and he would be at the door, and he was 70, and he was going to tell you that you were supposed, as the meat company here, make meat out of cells. And that was, let's say, I think 1997, 1999. And for Peter to actually listen to that and be so polite and so friendly and actually getting it, and then trying within Sara Lee as a small Dutch country, trying to convince Sara Lee within its own company, like, I think we should actually do this with this gentleman. That's brave.
That's huge.
That's huge. Yeah. That's brave. So, and every time I tell Peter how much I think he's a hero in my book, Ira, don't do that. But it's so there for me, there are kind people that were nice to my father, willing to listen and see that there was something special going on there. But without those people, nothing would have happened, or it would have taken so much more time. And then in 2002, this group of people got $2 million from the Dutch government. And then some research started happening, specifically on cultured need. And it led my father to be totally frustrated, because at that time, he didn't really understand, I think, how science works. You get funding, and then you first finish what you were working on, and then you, we can go on with something else. So he thought the $2 million would be used solely for cultured need, and everybody would be on it. And the reality of most research money is that a lot of the money just evaporates, and only a small amount of that huge amount of money actually went into the research. And the other thing that actually happened was that Carlijn Bouten, who was in Nijmegen University, she got sick. And then totally by chance, Mark Post was there, and he was, I think at that time, quite new at Nijmegen, but he did similar research and he took over. So suddenly Mark Post had to deal with my father, who was at that time even older, was not a scientist, had gotten everybody this money, but there was a huge respect, but also there was not the same language. Mm. And my father was in a hurry, and that must have been very hard for everybody around him, working with him, because he wanted to make it happen, and everybody else wanted to do good research. Mm. And that's not always aligned, being in a hurry and doing really good research.
Yeah, it's hard to make science move fast.
Absolutely. And so people ask me, aren't you proud of what your father... I'm super proud of what my father did. I also believe that if you look at what he actually did, doing all these miles, doing all these conversations, trying to give in so many people, the stamina to do this for so many years, that's amazing. And I don't think anybody else could have done that. So it's not that my father discovered cultured meat. Yes, he did discover it on his own, but there were many other people that also thought of the idea. But that he actually went out and pursued this, I don't think anybody else could have done that. And he achieved so much, even though he never ate it. I have now, but he never ate it. And the only thing that is really sad about it is that up to when he got sick, eventually died, he was still frustrated about the fact that it wasn't there yet. And he has never taken the time to see what he actually did achieve. Mm. I can see that. Everybody around him could see that. But the sad part of the story is that I don't think my father realized or was satisfied with what he had achieved. And I think he should have been, but I don't think he was.
Yeah. So shifting gears to Kind Earth Tech,
yeah.
Tell us a little bit about what KET is and how it got started.
You have amazing people in the world, and one of them is Olivia Fox-Caban. And I met Olivia Fox-Caban at a sort of after party after a GFI conference. And I had nothing to do, and there was up there, there's a party at Olivia's. No idea who Olivia was. Nothing to do, so I took an Uber and went to a place. And there was this nice group of people hanging around in her garden, and I had a short meeting with her around taking out the trash and finding out that taking out the trash at Olivia's place is something very specific, because this goes there, that goes there, that goes there. And I found her totally fun. And then I told her I was from Amsterdam, and then I got introduced to her husband, and Amsterdam is amazing, which is true. But so we got talking. Luckily, I got her phone number. And a couple of months later, I called her and saying, I have no idea what I'm supposed to do in this sphere. Do you have an idea? And in a way, only Olivia can do that. She said, girl, you're going to be so busy. I said, oh, okay. And then 2 days later, she said, I think you're going to be head of Europe. And the only thing I said was, sure, if you think I'm going to be head of Europe, no idea what I'm going to do there, but I'm going to be head of Europe. And then I called her back, okay, no idea why I'm head of Europe, no idea what I'm head of Europe of, but yes, and you should come to San Francisco. We're doing an event there, and we're opening it together. Mind you, at that time, I had been on stage several times telling the story of my father and Cultured Meat and whatever, but opening a show in San Francisco together with Olivia was not top of mind. Like, huh? Okay. But I did go. I stayed with Olivia. We went to the venue, and I broke my arm. So I stayed in... So I didn't go to our first venue, and we had extensive talks about it. And it was, at that time, it was the alternative protein show, and everybody was talking about alternative proteins. And I like that, because you have my background, which is cultivated meat. But at this point, I am super excited about the fact that there is an alternative protein field and not only cultivated meat. And then I think they released me from the ER at 5 o'clock, and I went back to the venue, and they were closing up. And the closing up remarks were, well, we might do next cat events here and there and this and that. And the only thing I actually did there was raise my left arm, because that was the one I didn't break, and say, hey, aren't you forgetting Amsterdam? And then there was like, yes, Amsterdam, let's do Amsterdam. Oh, fun Amsterdam, home of cultured meat. Okay. Then I went back to Amsterdam. I went to NEMO, which is a science museum, where we did the first ever cultured meat event in 2010. And I knew that they would have a future food exhibit. And I thought, why not combine it? At this future food exhibit, I was actually planning to exhibit the first ever working cultivated meat machine as an art piece. I designed that, and I wanted to have that in that museum. And they were super excited about doing a show in Amsterdam. And so I called Olivia and said, hey, your head of Europe is calling you, and your next cat event is going to be Amsterdam. And that's how that came about. And so why on earth it is called cat, I have no idea. In the cat organization, things just happen. Somebody has a good idea, and if somebody just pursues that idea, it is there. So it's not that we plan something for the next 5 years, or we have extensive plans for whatever. No, we have a good idea, and if you actually make it happen, that's how it happens. And I think that what it stands for is Kind Earth Tech. I'm a firm believer that humans are technical beings. The fact that we are talking, the fact that we are cooking, there's so many things that are techniques to further us along. And whether we always do that in the right way or the wrong way, that's another discussion. But we adapt techniques as if it's our nature. Whereas we do also adapt techniques that are not very kind to this earth, I think we are capable of creating techniques that are kind to this earth, and where we are a part of this earth, also kind to ourselves, but to all beings. I like the idea that you have Kind Earth Tech. And that applies in this instance to the largest industry in the world, which is food, which is not surprisingly, of course, the largest, because that's what we live off. So when it surprises people that food is actually such a large industry, I'm always a bit like, yeah, what else? But there are other huge industries which are at this moment not kind to this earth, like fashion. So you could think of CAT being a platform that creates an event or an idea or something around fashion or around kids or around men. Right now, for instance, masculinity is perceived as something that is quite toxic. Most things perceived as manly are not very kind to this earth. If you could make that look differently, that could be a cat topic. So we could think of so many things around Kind Earth Tech. But right now we had the Kind Earth Tech Alternative Protein and Dairy Show in Amsterdam. And I'm a designer. And I designed the event in such a way that you would stay awake. The chance of you actually learning something was actually there. So not just taking away a few things, but taking away almost everything that we had to offer. And I created it in such a way that the first day was head. So we pumped your head full of stuff, information. Then the next day was breakout sessions on boats, going into the museum, being fully inspired in different ways. So that was, for me, the hard part. And then the third day was hands-on. You could do round tables. There was actually a tempeh workshop. So if you were really fed up with learning, then you could go and make your own tempeh in the museum. So it was all around inspiring you to take home and do something with what we had to offer. And this was open, or is open, to scientists, to the general public, if they're interested in specific group, whether they're vegetarian or flexitarians, farmers. The theme of this CAT, for instance, was how can farmers do business with new techniques? And it was around circularity. So I actually told all these amazing speakers that I admire and were there only for content and not because they paid us to be on stage, because that's another very specific thing about CAT. Nobody gets paid. I don't get paid. And telling them, you are not allowed to use your carbon footprint slides. I'm not interested in those. We're beyond that. Mm-hmm. We are beyond carbon footprint slides, because that's linear, and we are in a round world, and it's a circular system. And by this time, I want you to start thinking about your place in a circular system. Mm-hmm. So where's your stuff going to be made? Where's your waste going to go? And so either you take off your carbon footprint, and I want you to be honest about the fact where you are in your research or your thinking or your model around circularity. And if you're not there, please say so, because there will be students at the venue and maybe they will pick it up and see that as something they want to work on. So telling the world that you're not there yet, or that you can't do something, or you haven't thought about it, please be frank about that, because then we can help you out. If you don't tell us, we don't know. And that worked out very well. Every speaker was kind enough, sometimes grinning to me because I was moderating a lot of things. Yes, and Ira has asked us, and and so some new content was also created there. And also I asked everybody to think whether their new techniques or their innovation was something that could be a possible work model for farmers in this world. One of the things that came out of it, most of what people are working on are possibilities for farmers, or converting farmland or converting farms themselves into supporting, working with these innovations. I was super excited about that.
That's cool. And I saw the photos of the cultivated meat founders on the boats, giving presentations. Yeah. What was that experience like?
Well, I am from Amsterdam. We're a delta country. We build dikes to keep the water out. But 70% of our country is actually below seawater. So water and being on water is something that is very familiar to me. To make matters worse, I live on a converted freighter. So I live on boats and I do a lot on the water. And one of the magical things that happens when you put somebody on a boat is you can't get off.
Right.
So you actually push an extreme form of networking. Well, we all know these events these days are actually, well, the content is nice, but everything is for networking purposes. And to put people on boats, sometimes even squashed together, listening to inspiring stories, that makes it really exciting for the listener, but also for the speaker. Before we went out on these boats, and those were historic channel boats, they could hold 50 to 60 people.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And we had three rounds. So they could choose So they were on three different boats. They had three different topics they could listen to. So there was some free will there. And they went through the canals of Amsterdam. And usually we look at the canals of Amsterdam as something that is for the tourists because it looks so nice. But before that, I had a small conversation with everybody there. Is don't look at it as a tourist, but this was a technical system. And for instance, the techniques that we have these days was that this was filthy, this was dirty, and if you would fall into the Amsterdam canals, you would get sick. And these days, even our queen swims in these canals. So these canals are made as a technical system to make the city work. And we've improved that system nowadays so that every child and every person can just jump into the Amsterdam canals, have a swim, and nothing's wrong. And everything in Amsterdam is, it's the history of the city that we make systems. We humans make systems to do something better all the time. So I gave them an extra mission to look at the Amsterdam canals, not as a tourist, but as a solution that worked at the time and that we've also improved, and that we have to now listen to all these stories on these boats and look at them as the next best solution or possibility or technique for something.
To improve meat production.
Yeah, but we also had air protein there. We also had fungi there. We also had algae there.
Food production. Yeah.
Food production, yeah. Exactly. And better food production and fairer food production and kinder food production.
Right. And I do like K-E-T, kind earth tech. It really does, like when you hear it, you know exactly what it means. And you almost also think about what you can immediately improve when you hear about that. Kind earth and then the tech.
Well, it's nice of you to say that, because for me it's now something that is top of mind. Okay, cat and kind earth tech. And these days I don't have to explain cultured meat anymore. I have to explain cat, which is okay. I like to explain stuff. Yeah. But it's nice for me to understand that you at least understand why we've called it kind earth tech. And I feel very comfortable with the term. And alternative protein, that's something else that I've come accustomed to. But those were words I didn't use 3 or 4 years ago. So in a way, I'm relatively new to the sphere. And right now, I'm 56 now, about the age that my father started cultivated meat. So I'm really like, yeah, let's see what I'm going to do. Not the same thing at all, because I'm a different person. But for instance, designing events that are inspirational to people is something I can do. And I like to do that because these are important topics.
I want to wrap up by saying, is there room for cultured meat at all?
Yeah. I've been around eating meat for most of my life. Diving deeper into all of this made me somebody that doesn't want to eat it anymore. But I totally understand why people eat meat. If you give somebody, and this is this, every salesperson knows this, every marketing person knows this, and somebody, for instance, like a neuroscientist knows this. If you have the choice of two, it's an either-or question. So, and you use a very fast decision mode, like, okay, I'm going to do this or that. And you don't actually think at that moment. So you have all this knowledge about the horrible conditions that are a part of animal agriculture or any animal products. As soon as you give somebody the choice of three, so plant-based meat, cultivated meat, or conventional meat, he actually has to think about what he's going to do, and he has to choose. Whereas if you have the choice of two, you don't actually choose, you just do what you're... It's instinctive, and you do what you're accustomed to. If you actually think about cultivated meat, what it is, and especially what it's not harmful, it's not painful, it's not bad for you. The chance that something in there that is dirty or whatever is minimal, or not at all possible. So everybody will understand. Hey, this is great. I'm going to choose that. But I also think that in the long run, cultivated meat will probably also make us eat more plant-based stuff. Mm-hmm. So its first role will be changing animal suffering to just meat. But the fact that we will be at that point adapting something like that will also make us think more toward plant-based alternatives, because we don't need to eat so much meat at all. The sad thing about meat is that in Asia, where they have a nice diet of 10 to 15% of animal proteins, is now shifting towards what we do in Europe and what we do in, or what they do in America, which is really sad. If it would stay as it is, we still have a chance of feeding a lot of people. But the fact that the growth is expecting in Asia, that is the scary part. And I've known that since I was 14, 15, because I remember my father and his friends doing a sort of math on a piece of paper, like, okay, if the Chinese are also all going to eat meat, we will need four planets, and wow, we will not have any polar caps. Mm. I know this for 40 years. So right now, if I see all these people talking about climate change, I'm really like, yeah, hello. We've known this for years and nobody did anything. So the other thing that is very worrying to me is I hope all of this is not just fashionable, and that the current situation where for the first time ethics is fashionable, not to everybody, but it is fashionable. Ethics has never been fashionable. Right now it is. I hope that is going to last long enough for cultured meat to come to fruition and to actually be in the shops and provide a choice for people to say, hey, I have this choice and I have the possibilities to think about it. And then I'm quite convinced that the narrative of the product cultivated meat will be so obvious to people that they will be very willing to eat it. Why on earth wouldn't you?
You can learn more about KET at kindearth.tech.
Yep.
Ira, do you have any last insights for our listeners today? Any last thoughts or words?
I want everybody to think on how they can help make this happen. And if something is not clear, ask the question why it's not clear. So don't assume, but ask. Because asking questions around something that you don't understand or you don't believe in or have questions about, that is communication. And we need a lot of communication about this. Because if all of these people are now working on all these new techniques, but we don't have the right questions from the people that this is for, we could do something wrong. So if you're a doubter or you think this is wrong or we should do something else, please tell me. Because then I can either tell you, yes, but this or this is why we're doing this, or I can be educated about something that I'm missing. So if you're a doubter or you're a hater or you don't believe in this, please tell me.
Ira, thank you so much for sharing your insights on the Future Food Show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for joining us on this episode. If you know anyone making waves in the cultured meat industry, please reach out at futurefoodshow.com.